Hey everybody, welcome back to the Fitness First Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Mays, and I have a special guest with me today, Adam Pullman. I'm going to let you take it away, man. Just tell them, you know, what your specialty is and really how you got into coaching.
Yeah, so I mean, you can cut me off whenever if I spend too much time, because that can be a long story. But to start, in terms of like what I specialize in or who I work with, I really work with people who are wanting to improve their body composition. So lose body fat, put some muscle on, or both of those things. And generally, or more specifically, people who feel like they have been doing what they should and they're just not getting the results they should, or they're not getting any results. So people who feel like they're just spinning their wheels and throwing spaghetti at the wall and things just aren't working out for them. So that's generally who I work with. How I got into coaching is a little bit of a longer story, but I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. So I got into training early on, about 10 years ago. When I was growing up, though, I was playing baseball. Like, that was my first love. I love baseball. Like, I still do. Absolutely love it. And it's all I wanted to do with my life. I never had a plan of like, what am I going to do when I'm done with baseball? What job will I work? I didn't have any other interests. Like, that was the only interest I had in life, that and food, basically. and so, you know, it was either I'm going to play in the big leagues or I will live in my van in the minor leagues. I don't even care. I'll make no money. It doesn't matter. As long as I'm playing baseball, I'm going to be happy. So I went to college to play baseball, and then I got the yips, which is basically like a mental block. And you forget how to do the basic things. So pitching was still fine. I was a pitcher, but playing catch was extremely difficult. Like, I couldn't play catch from 60 feet because I was overthinking it so much. And then it's the most frustrating thing I've ever experienced in my life. And then it got worse, you know, where it did start to affect my pitching. And so I worked with a sports psychologist, got a little bit better, but then it started to come back. So long story short, the first year I lost half my scholarship. Second year they got rid of all of it. You know, they said I could hang around and try to figure it out, but they couldn't pay me to be there. And so I kind of thought to myself, you know, this was in North Dakota, so I was far away from home. I'm from Colorado. And I was away from family, and I was starting to hate baseball. And so, kind of had this like spiritual thing where I really felt like God was telling me like, hey, you need to go home. I have something better in store for you. And so as frustrating as it was to listen, I did, but I did it begrudgingly. I still tried out for other schools, other teams, and it just never got better. Things did not get better. And so I finally decided to let it go. And in my identity crisis, because all of who I was wrapped into baseball, my dad was bringing me to the gym just to get my mind off of baseball, and keep me from sulking in a dark room all day long. And started to work out with him. He did bodybuilding growing up. I shouldn't say growing up, but in his earlier years. And so he introduced me to lifting, and I fell in love with it. It was a great way for me to kind of get my demons out, so to speak, and have something healthy to do in terms of like a healthy way to cope, essentially. And I started to see like my body change. I got stronger, and I started noticing some muscle come in there. And it reminded me of baseball in the sense that like I put work in and I saw a result. And at the time I was, you know, still in college and I needed to figure out what I was going to do for a living. Still had no interest in doing anything. Like, the thought of going to a job made me want to blow my brains out. And I literally had no interest at all. And I was looking at other trainers at the gym at the time and thought to myself, they're having fun with people. They're interacting with people. I always love having conversations with people. And they get to teach people about like fitness, and they get to hang out in the gym. That's pretty cool. And it's flexible-ish, you know. That's something I can definitely do, at least while I'm in college, until I figure it out. And so started doing that around 19, and I fell in love with it. Absolutely fell in love with it, and I've been doing it ever since. Within a couple of years of training in person, though, I was like, you know what? I want to find a way to give my clients something better, and I wanted to find a way to have more freedom. Because as an in-person trainer, you know this, your income is dictated on how many hours you're training clients, really. And there are clients that have jobs, and so they need to train early in the morning or later in the evening, and sometimes there's a gap. But if you get lucky, you know, with people who don't have jobs or stay-at-home parents, you can fill up that time. But if you do, you're working from 5 a.m to 6 p.m straight with not a single break in between, not even a 5-minute break. And so at the time I was like, okay, I can do this as a 19, 20, 21 year old, but I would love to be married at some point. I want to have a family at some point. there's no way I'm going to be able to do that and prioritize a wife and kids. And so I started looking for ways I can have a little bit more freedom and also help my coach or help my clients a lot better. And that's how I got into training online. And I've been doing nothing but online for the last 4 years or so. And in between the in-person only and now has been a little bit of both in-person and online kind of hybrid type thing. But that's the quickest summary I can give of how I started and how I got to where I am now.
Oh, man. I mean, like, honestly, I love your story. I really do. So I actually look for stories like yours. Like when I'm going to listen to podcasts or just, I mean, audiobooks too about people's lives. It's that exact story of like back against the wall, don't know what you're going to do. And then overcoming that, I think is something a lot of people relate to. I mean, when I got fired from my in-person like CrossFit coaching job last year, I didn't know what me and my wife were going to do just because, you know, I was doing some online, like nutrition really only. I did some like programming online, but I mean, I wasn't very good at it. And I didn't know how to run a business. Like I was a coach. Like, that's all I ever knew.
Totally.
And I got fired knowing that I probably needed to leave that job for a little while, but I'm just too scared to take the leap really. Now I'm punted off the cliff instead of jumping, you know, and, and that was basically, that's obviously not the same, like in that regard, but it's a terrifying feeling to not know what you're going to do next and to just take the leap. And I think that the hardest part about entrepreneurship as a whole, I mean, in any industry, but fitness is obviously what we can relate to, is taking the leap and not knowing where you're going to come down. I mean, and all the hard work could be for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be everything. I mean, so what was the hardest part for you? Like when you were going to take the leap into training or training and then online training, you know, were those the hardest thoughts for you to get past, or were there like other circumstances that made it more difficult?
You know, going from in person to online on a personal level, as far as like my belief in my ability to do something, that was not an issue. I knew like somehow, some way I would figure it out. But the issue I would say was with other people, friends, mm-hmm. family, who were very concerned in terms of like, hey, this training thing is fine temporarily, but what are you going to do with your life? Right.
Yeah.
Training is not one of those things. It's starting to change a little bit now with online coaching, people building businesses, but training is usually not one of those things that is seen as a respectable, serious career. And so at the time, that was the most frustrating, not just because I didn't feel supported. I understood why they felt that way. Honestly, it's like, I'm broke. I'm not making any money. I totally understand why you're questioning this right now. The hard part was I had no way to explain to them, this is how I'm going to figure this out. All mm-hmm. I had was this internal sense of hope and peace that somehow, some way, if I just keep waking up and I keep putting my best foot forward, I am going to figure it out. So to answer your question, I wouldn't say on a personal level, like with my own mindset, my own beliefs, there was ever a challenge. I think baseball helped me out a lot with that. But the issue was knowing the details. I knew nothing about running a business. I knew nothing about trying to get clients. I knew nothing about anything outside of coaching. And so it was very difficult to say like, hey, you should have faith in me because I'm doing X, Y, and Z. Like if my family was sat down and I had to give them a business plan, there would be no business plan.
there was never a business plan. Yeah,
totally.
Ever.
Never. And that was, that was the challenging piece. But I would also say that's what helps us as entrepreneurs do what we need to do. It's that famous quote of like, if you want to take the island, you have got to burn the boats, right? And so many people want to focus on the safety net, right? But the more of a safety net that you have, the less you're going to give it your all. Because if you know you don't have that backup there, you have no other choice, right? Now, there can be some wisdom for sure in like making smart financial decisions, making sure you maybe have some sort of an emergency fund just in case there are some low months where you don't have an income. Sure. You know, I'm not trying to advise to be, you know, crazy with your finances, but the more you focus on that safety net, again, the less you're focusing on plan A. And when that happens, plan A is never going to come to fruition.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I feel like a lot of times people lose perspective and that maybe they just never had the perspective of how hard sometimes things are going to be. I heard a story one time from somebody who was talking about like, you know, they were working with a group of people and they basically said, you know, they didn't want to do the thing that they were doing anymore. And he had to look at them and be like, you know, how many of you guys thought this would be hard? And they were all like, well, yeah, we thought it'd be hard, but like not this. And he goes like, this is hard. Like this is what hard is, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times, whether it's weight loss, body composition, running a business, I mean, even financial investments, like I see so many parallels across all the different avenues where you just have to reframe what hard looks like for you. Like hard for me was 2 weeks ago, it was driving my wife nuts because I was bitching constantly about how slow things were. I can't get things going. I don't have any new clients coming up. Every day you do the same process. And then the last week has been the busiest week I've ever had in coaching. Mm-hmm. And I think the hard then was mentally staying focused and mm-hmm. staying the course. And so taking it over to like body composition, weight loss, would you say that's the number one issue people face, or is there something else?
Man, to say there's a number one issue.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe not a number one.
I hear you though. Yeah. I would say it's one of the most common, you know, if you were to think of a mindset issue. Yeah. I would say that's probably the top one out there. You know, but there are several factors that bleed into that. The first one that automatically comes to mind, like when you said the number one issue, I would say that the number one issue is that we are, I don't know if obesogenic is the right word, but like we are in an environment that works directly against our goals to mm-hmm. be leaner, to be fitter, and to be stronger. We have our, and it's like, there are good things about that, right? Like we have our world set up to where we can be in a seated position all day long, get to work, drive back from work, order DoorDash. Like all we need to do is really walk to the car, walk back in the house, leave the couch, walk to the door, walk back to the couch. That's all we need to do. And we can get work done. We can make, this is generalization, but we can get work done. Sure. We can make money. We can eat. Like there, you go back 50 years, that was not a thing. You go back 100 years, that's not a thing. I mean, you go back to, even if you were to tell maybe, you know, our grandparents' generation, like, yeah, we pay to go to a gym and lift heavy things. They'd be like, what? You know, that's what you do when you work. You're supposed to get paid to do that stuff. And so I would say that's the number one thing that really keeps people from, I shouldn't say that's the thing that keeps people. That makes it easy for people to believe that they can't change because they want to find a situation in which they can have their cake and eat it too. How can I absorb and utilize and stay with the current of this extremely sedentary environment and get results that require me to do the exact opposite of that? You just can't. And so that might come up with maybe food tracking or alcohol or whatever. Like if you want to be different, you have to do what's against the norm. And I even think about like I'm trying not to go on too much of a tangent, but I even think about my posts on getting steps in. Steps in is the most common thing that people freak out about in the comment section. And if that doesn't tell you like where our society is, I don't know what is. You know, the concept of getting a walking treadmill to get movement in because you don't want to be seen as the weirdo in the office. It's like, but your only other option is not being at your computer and walking laps around the building. And you can't do that because your boss monitors how much you're on your computer. So that's the solution, right? But, oh no, I don't want to be seen as a weirdo. It's like, that's what you have to do. You know, so I think when it comes to number one thing that's keeping people, it is both the environment, but also like half the environment and half, honestly, a lack of willingness to go against what is normal and what is accepted in today's world.
Yeah. And I feel that way from business side. I feel that way from fitness side because everything normal basically guarantees that you end up normal, right? I mean, that's the, what was the stat I heard? It was like on average, like the average American is obese, divorced, and has less than $1,000 in their bank account. And you're like,
it's terrifying.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I mean, that sucks. That sounds horrible. Mm-hmm. And if you do the normal shit, you can pretty much guarantee that you're going to end up in the middle of the bell curve, right? Like if you sit at your desk all day and you don't worry about steps, you don't worry about working out, you don't worry about food, you DoorDash all the time. Like I follow a few personal finance pages and he was going over one person's personal finance and they were spending like, oh gosh, it was like $4,000 a month on DoorDash or $5,000 a month on DoorDash. Isn't that insane? Oh my gosh. It'll blow your mind. And for a lot of people, that's so normal because again, they don't have to go to get right. the food. They just sit on the couch. They, you know, tap, they get it delivered to their house. And that's not to say that sometimes on a busy day, I don't, you know, DoorDash Chipotle or something like that, but it's definitely not a normal occurrence. It's not like there have been so many times where like me and my wife will go work out in the middle of the day and I'll see a line like wrapped around Whataburger. For anyone listening, not in Texas, that's like a big fast food chain. And I forget that people eat that for lunch. You know what I mean? Yeah. Cause like I would feel like shit if I had Whataburger for lunch.
Totally.
Every day.
Totally. Yeah. And it's one of those things too, where like, I don't know if people listening might be thinking, oh, two fitness guys, you know, talking about the rah-rah motivational, you know, yeah. I have nothing but chicken and rice mindset. Like that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about being on the extreme, but we are talking about understanding and appreciating the fact that if you know, like you just said, Jake, if you want to change, you have to change. Right. And if you're not willing to change, your outcomes will not change. And that's really what we're getting at here. And I think another contributing factor, you didn't ask, but I'm going to throw it in there now that I'm thinking about it. Another contributing factor to this, and this is something that I have definitely changed my view and stance on a lot as a coach over time. A big contributing factor, in my opinion, that kind of keeps people in this mindset is how enabling I think coaches and trainers and just people in the health and fitness space have become. I think that we have, out of a scarcity of being too harsh, we have swung too far on the other end of the pendulum and really led people to believe that they can make incredible change in their lives without having to change much in their lives, right?
Yeah,
have your cake anything. And eat it too. Yeah, eat all the Whataburger you want. You see all these, because it feels good to hear those things. I would love as a coach for someone to tell me, oh, hey, don't worry about a thing. You don't need to change the way you post. You don't need to change the way you do introduction calls with prospective clients. You don't need to touch a thing. All you need to do is just sign up with this thing and you're automatically going to get, you know, your business is going to 3X. Like I want to hear that because it feels good and that's easy, but that's just not true. And I think that we've done that as coaches. And what really made me think about it with the personal finance thing is the Ramsey Show. And I listen to the Ramsey Show constantly. And I will say, like, as a Christian, I do have some issues in the way he communicates, but I also am a big supporter of the direct communication style they have with people, because that's what people usually need to have that wake up call. Where it's like, no, this is what's required to get to where you want to be. Either do it or don't, right? Usually when we're just spoon-fed the information that keeps us in the same lifestyle that we're in and tells us everything is okay, just keep doing what you're doing, we're not going to change anything. So as a coach, like, I still want to hang on to the empathy and understanding what it's like, because I used to be 40 to 50 pounds overweight, like super overweight. Mm-hmm. I used to struggle a ton to like not just get lean, but stay lean year round. I used to feel like I had to cut everything out to be able to get lean. And so I get it. And like, I want to maintain that empathy, but I don't want that empathy to turn into enabling, because people need to be pushed out of their comfort zone to change. So in my coaching, like, I've definitely swung to a more middle ground to say, okay, here is what you want. And I understand like where you are now sucks. To get where you want, this is what's required. What are you willing to do? What are you not willing to do? That way the client has the choice to make, they have the ability to make the choice. Like, okay, I'm willing to do this, but I'm not willing to do this. So their expectations are set and they're not frustrated. So that's a little bit of a tangent, but that's something that came to mind.
No, I'm glad you said it. And honestly, just like the first thing you said was like two fitness guys with the motivation and the rah-rah. Like, I went, God, I don't know why my screen does. This is the second podcast that did it.
Yeah, it's a setting.
Whatever. Anyway, the rah-rah thing, like, I want you to know, like, I'm as lazy as they come with food. And then what I mean by that is, like, I look for pre-made stuff that I can throw in the microwave and heat up, or like the Premier protein shakes that are pre-made. I am always going to lean more towards things that aren't going to take up a ton of my time to eat and to make, that are still going to get me close to the macros that I want to get close to for my day. And it's going to nourish me enough to where, you know, I have good blood work. I'm a healthy guy. But this is not me saying that, like, I spend 4 hours on Sundays meal prepping, because that's that sounds awful. I don't ever do that. And reheated food to me tastes horrible. I don't do it. But I found like some burrito bowls from Costco that have really great macros, and I have one of those for lunch every day. You know, I have the Premier protein shake, and I put like liquid egg whites in it. And again, it's just because it's fast. It's easy. I can make a protein shake with 100 grams of protein in it and sip on it over an hour while I'm working. So this is not to say that I'm on here saying that like you need to eat chicken, rice, and vegetables for every meal, because I would never do that.
But it is to say we got to get the protein in. And so let's find a way to do it, right?
Yeah, let's make it happen. Let's find a way to do it. So that leads me to the next question. What's the what's a big nutritional deficiency that you see from, you know, a lot of people that come your way for coaching?
Fiber.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I the reason I picked fiber is just because protein is the easy one. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows they don't get enough protein, like for sure. But the reason I pick fiber is because not just is it helpful in terms of your gut health and your digestion, but the more you focus on fiber from whole natural nutrient dense foods, the easier your calorie deficit is going to be for fat loss, because you have literally no choice to throw more fruits and veggies and some starches in your diet, right? Some grains in your diet. There's no other option. And when you do that, like I just had a client the other day reach out and he was like, I had no idea that I could eat so much food and still not even come close to reaching my goals. And it's simply because he doesn't have a high calorie target at all, at least you know, in my opinion. And it's just because he has made a drastic change to his nutrition and he's like overloading his plates with fruits and veggies. And it's like, people don't understand how easy being in a calorie deficit can be when you change your nutrition in that way. And so the reason I pick fiber is because one, we're not eating a whole lot of whole natural nutrient dense foods and therefore we're low on fiber. But two, when you focus on adding the fiber in, you find that you're far more satiated, you're having a more well-rounded diet, and you are having a much easier time reaching your calorie goals. The biggest mistake people make is they continue to eat the same with their food choices, but then eat less. And that can work from a numbers perspective in terms of your calories, no doubt about it. But you're going to be hungry the whole time. Your energy probably isn't going to feel too good. And you are probably not going to be too consistent because you're constantly going to be thinking about how you want more food. How much better would it be to say, wow, I'm like absolutely stuffed and I'm still 200 calories short of my goal. That's like the name of the game, because you can maintain that for forever, really. And so I say fiber is really one of the biggest ones out there that I think people are under consuming on and they should be getting a lot more of.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that leads you straight into food volume, right? Like it just takes up more space in your gut. So you're going to feel more full longer. So I even tell a lot of people that don't love tracking, like maybe they've tried tracking, couldn't stick with it, whatever. You know, that's the first thing we do is we focus on protein, fiber, and they're like, God, I feel so full all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, this is the point. And so now you don't have to track necessarily. No, it's not necessarily great for everybody. I mean, I know some people love tracking, some people don't love it, but fiber and protein are really, the two biggest ones that I feel like people miss out on. And so I feel like the hard part is that a lot of people, you know, that are conditioned to the Whataburgers and the fast food and the drive-through chains, it's like, there's no such thing as negative fiber, but if there was, I mean, it's like negative fiber. Totally. And so what are like two foods that people can easily kind of put in for more fiber?
Yeah. So, a couple of my favorites, I would say in terms of your specifics in your question of the easiest to put in, I'll lead with this. Depending on the individual, you want to think about like what you enjoy. I always have my clients focus on two things. What do you enjoy? And then what's easy to add to what you're already doing? Because if you are going to look forward to it because you enjoy it and it's easy to add to what you're already doing versus like feeling like you have to make an entirely different breakfast or lunch or whatever, you're just far more likely to be consistent with it. So those are two things to consider for the individual. I found that most of the time, like in terms of fruit, and like berries, like getting a huge bag of frozen berries, like a berry medley from Costco or wherever you want, is one of the easiest ways. Because people who are trying to focus on their nutrition and their protein usually are throwing in some sort of Greek yogurt in there. And that is such an easy way to add like some fiber to your Greek yogurt in the morning. Just add some berries in there. Plus, berries are good in general. Who doesn't like just having a big bowl of fresh berries as a snack? Like that's so easy. We also get lost, Jake, too, in the box of how we think about nutrition, right? So, for example, just think about breakfast foods, lunch foods, dinner foods. That's already one box that we tend to stay in, and we forget that we can have tons of different foods at different times of the day, and it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. So even the thought of like having a big bowl of berries with their lunch. They might be like berries. I have that on Saturday morning with my pancakes. Why would I have that? And so completely breaking that concept can help a lot too. So, hey, buddy, my dog came to say hello.
I saw him walking.
Yeah. So he's like, you haven't walked in since this morning. What's the deal? So berries, I would say, is a big one. And then another one that I really like, and I wouldn't say it's a fiber bomb, but it has best of both worlds in terms of a good source of fat and fibers, avocado. I love avocado, and that is such an easy thing to add to a bowl that you make, some like a rice and a meat and a veggie, add some avocado in there. You have eggs in the morning, add some avocado in there. Have a salad, add some avocado in there. So those are two of my favorite sources to throw into the diet.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so, I mean, I'm sure from your perspective on this too, a guy like Paul Saladino drives you nuts.
Yeah, sure.
So what's like, if somebody comes to you and they're like, you know, I've been watching Paul Saladino. He's telling me fiber's terrible for you. You know, fruits and vegetables are bad for you. What do you tell those people?
Yeah, that's a really tough one, right? Because at the root, like at the core of it, to really understand the truth, you have to dig into the deepest, darkest depths of the research. Mm-hmm. And most clients aren't going to want to do that. And no, that's fine. So usually what I do is I try to take what he's saying, briefly talk about the study, and then explain it in lay terms, and then also say, here's what we see in a ton of other research. Do with that what you wish, is usually what I'll say. Usually a client that's working with me is already viewing me as a trusted source, you know? Sure. So sometimes I'll say, yeah, you know, he might be saying that because X, Y, Z, but here's what we see with other things going on. And they'll go, oh, okay, cool. I'll start eating fiber again. So helping them understand also the social media aspect too of like, hey, it's not just his opinion. He's running a business, right? Mm-hmm. And he needs to make content that grabs attention, that is controversial, because that's going to lead to more comments and engagement. And that's going to lead to more growth in terms of his posts. Yeah, it's all that clickbait stuff. And usually with that kind of thing, there can be a grain of truth in that type of content, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, we kind of have to help them understand the depths of what's going on, because usually we just see or hear what is said and then accept that as 100% truth and move on. And I always encourage them to do the same with my content, anybody else's content. It's like, okay, what is the truth of this? And I think that that whole concept in general, Jake, creates a massive need for us as coaches to step in and be an editor, so to speak, or a filter for them to take things through, because they're just not going to want to do that on their own. And frankly, I don't blame them. I wouldn't either. You know, there's a reason I have a CPA do my taxes. I'm not trying to figure it out. Exactly. You know, so we all have our own thing where we're just like, I'm not going to do that. So yeah, that's how I would handle that with a client there. But it's interesting because he's changed his tune over time for sure. It was nothing but testicles and liver and meat. And now it's like, okay, there's some fruit in there, you know? So I at least respect that he's willing to change a little bit.
The rumor with that was that he was starting to develop health issues, like from only eating red meat all the time.
Interesting.
Literally going exactly against what everybody warned him was going to happen. You know, if you only eat red meat all the time, you start getting really high cholesterol, blood pressure is going to get really high, the red meat's association with colon cancer. I mean, again, it's all correlation, right? Nothing's proven. I think that's a big thing with research. A lot of people don't get research just lends evidence. It doesn't prove anything.
Correct. So important.
Draws correlations. So like the risk of colon cancer from an increase of red meat without additional fiber.
Yeah.
It's huge. And so that's, again, he started seeing all those issues. So then he started eating fruit again for the fiber, right? So that he could help contain some of those problems. But yeah, like I even made a video over one he used that was like a certain amount of vegetables will actually cause thyroid disruption over a certain period of time. Of course, he didn't include the period of time and how much. And so I went and read the study that he was referring to, and it said that you had to eat a kilogram. You had to eat a kilogram. So for Americans, 2.2 pounds of broccoli, bok choy, you know, like those types of vegetables every day for months.
Right.
And then maybe even in this conclusion study, they're like, and then maybe you'd start develop some of these thyroid issues. And that's, And really, and again, in the conclusion, they said, but more research would need to be done. But he just took the headline of it and just said, like, totally. Vegetables cause thyroid issues and ran with it.
Did that study, do you remember if it said anything about the veggies being cooked or uncooked?
I think it was raw.
Okay, yeah.
No, don't hold me to that, but I think it was raw.
That would make more sense for sure, the raw. But it's like, I know for sure I feel a massive difference. Like whenever I'm at a party and there's like a bunch of raw broccoli, I'm like, nah, I'm good. Yeah. Not because it's like bad for me, but I know like cooked veggies are just so much easier for me to eat and break down. So anyway, that just made me curious there. But yeah, that's what happens. And you brought up a great point with the research. It just points us to a potential explanation.
Yeah.
And you have to look at the body of research to then have a more concrete conclusion. For example, a recent study that seemed to have better controls than others in the past showed that like spot reduction in the abdominal area is possible.
Okay.
But the things that they controlled for energy expenditure, right? They were meticulous on how many calories the person burned throughout the day to figure out like where that energy is coming from, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what they did not control for is nutrition. So you have that leads you to add questions of like how much protein was the person eating? When were they eating these nutrients? How much were they eating throughout the day? Stuff like that. So you kind of have to understand like, okay, based on what the researchers did, this is what they found. But that doesn't mean that what they found is absolute truth. It just means that this is what happened and this is what was discovered, right? So like if I had a group of maybe like 10 witnesses to an event, and each person, you know, says something a little bit different, but two of them say something completely different, right? I can still look at the whole body and say, okay, in a general sense, this is probably an 80% chance of what happened, and we're going to move forward with this assumption of what may have happened. We're not going to let these one or two say that this is what happened for the entire situation, if that makes sense. So you kind of have to remember that when it comes to research, and that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's just so hard, man. Cause like research studies are so long. I mean, like they're long for me to read. I mean, like I can't imagine like someone that's like, I, even in my master's degree, like we had to take a course over like reading research,
just how to do it.
And,
right.
Yeah. Just how to do it. And like, it's so hard.
Yes.
And there's so many plots and graphs. And then one of the biggest ones, oh my gosh, I think one of the biggest ones is like, it's the degrees of certainty or, I'm blanking on the phrase right now, but what is that?
The statistical significance or something different?
Yeah. It's like the significance, but it has to be within a 1% or a 5% right. And so depending on the statistical significance they use,
like a p-value.
Yeah. It may not have really been that significant at all.
Right.
But based on the criteria of the study, it was significant.
Exactly.
So that's, and so like, one came out not that long ago about, aspartame with the, it was damaging DNA, right?
Right.
But the study was done on in vitro cells.
Right.
And they injected 1,000 times the amount of aspartame that's in a Diet Coke into a group of cells. So not even a person.
Right.
And then, yes, it did damage the DNA of the cells. But the headline read, aspartame damages human DNA, right?
Totally. Which is what happened. But it wasn't.
Yes, it is.
That's a lot different than a Diet Coke a day damages
a
40-year-old man's – right, totally. It's like just – it wasn't even a Diet Coke. It's like nothing but the aspartame and like you said, in vitro. And it's like, okay, can we learn something? Sure, but like there's a large gap between what's happening there and what happens in real life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So final question. I always like to end with this question for people that come on.
Okay.
What would you say is your most controversial belief as a coach? I mean – no judgment either way. I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's a really good question. there's like 30 that come to mind, so I'm trying to think of the recent. I would say my most controversial belief is that I would say food. The one that comes to mind the most is that food tracking does not cause any sort of disordered eating habits. Food tracking is simply a tool that is used, just like a knife is or a gun is. And the person using it and the relationship they have with that tool is what dictates the outcome. And I would say it's definitely one of the most controversial, especially with women. Now, no doubt, like there's no denying that a lot of people who track their food have disordered eating habits, but there's, I'll have to find it, but there was I don't remember if it was a meta-analysis or what it was, but a bunch of studies led to a conclusion that the tracking itself is not what leads to it, but it's the individual's mindset going into it. And so that is, I would say, is one of my most controversial. And I would say the reason it's controversial is because it puts a lot of responsibility on the individual, which we don't like to hear. Yeah. But it's what we need to hear. And it takes a lot of responsibility off of something else that's outside of you. And it's controversial and not nice to hear, but it is what we need to hear because it's actually a good thing. It puts the power to change back in our hands. If it was the food tracking, if it was something else, then we have no choice but to sit here and be victims. But in reality, we have the power to change. And it all starts with our mindset. Another example is like another study I was reading found that like women who find, and this is always controversial because anytime you're a man explaining something about women, they get upset, right? Because it's the mansplaining thing. But anyway, they found that like women who view, and this is probably true of men too, women who viewed fitness models as emotionally damaging, right? Or mm-hmm. I think I said emotionally harmful. So like them being fit and seeing that makes me feel bad about myself. They found that those women in that study had an external locus of control, essentially the mindset that life happens to them.
Right.
Whereas there are other women studied and they found that the women who looked at those models and found them as inspirational or motivational, in other words, oh, wow, if they can do something like that, maybe I can do something similar. They had an internal locus of control. So basically a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. So anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent. But I would say one of the most controversial ones out there is the food tracking. But underneath that is the concept that we actually have the power to change a lot more than we think we do. And we need to stop pointing fingers and start looking in the mirror. And that's going to help us understand how capable and how awesome we truly are. And that's really what's going to help us change.
Yeah, man. I mean, and I don't think that's specific to women. I mean, the study may have been specific to women, but
totally.
I mean, I meet dudes all the time that, in my opinion, are just soft. Like, I mean, yeah. And again, I don't mean like their parents tragically died in a car accident. Get over it. I don't mean that. I mean, like, I'm talking to a guy who's like, oh man, like, I just don't make enough money and, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm like, okay, well, like, what do you do? Like when you get off work and they're like, just play video games, you know?
Totally. Totally. It's like, what's your problem?
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, what do you do on the weekend? They're like, well, I go out drinking with my friends and we eat out. And I'm like, okay, so if we add up like your bar tab and your eating out tab for the month, like, you know, is it across $1,200, $1,500? Like, I just found your vacation money. You know
right,
what I mean?
Like, half your problem. Yeah.
Yeah. I was totally. Like, I can find these issues. But again, like as soon as I start pointing that out, I'm a dick. You know, like
exactly.
I'm like,
and to reiterate your point, like we're doing this not because it's like we want you to feel bad about yourself. And also like we experience the same thing. Like when you talked about like that period of time where you're doing nothing but complaining and like with your wife and she was sick of it. I've done the same thing with my wife has been like, Adam, pull yourself together, man. Like,
yeah.
Figure it out, dude. Like you sound like a whiny baby right now. Like she has said that. And I'm like, like in the moment, I hate to hear that. Cause I want to be like, well, it's so-and-so's fault or whatever, but it's like, that's what I need to hear. Because I'm the only one that can change, you know, my circumstances for the most part. And so we do need to hear that. And we say that not to make you feel shame or guilt, but to remind you, like you are capable of unbelievable things that you just don't realize yet.
Yeah.
But the sooner you give yourself a little bit of wiggle room to realize what you're capable of doing, the better off you're going to be.
Oh, dude, for sure. I heard Alex Ramosi say, sometimes the answer is violence. And what he means by that is by action, like doing it. Like, he doesn't literally mean go out and hurt people. He means like sometimes the answer is more. Like you're just not doing enough. And your level of enough is you just don't even know what it is yet. Like I'll meet somebody, you know, when I thought like sending out DMs was like painful, right? Like, oh, getting rejected and stuff. And I meet someone, you know, that their team is getting out 1,000+ DMs a month.
Right.
And I feel like I'm busting my ass sending 15 a day.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And like, why do you think they're making $300,000 a month? You know what I mean? Like their chance, even if my ratio to making a sale is better, they're just doing so much more. And like, again, their answer was violence. It was just, I have to do it. I got to get it done. And it doesn't matter how I feel about it. You cannot feel good about it. And still fucking do it.
Dude, that is such a good point. I think so many people assume like, oh, well, you two, it's just in your DNA. Like, you want to do this all the time. You want to go to the gym and bust it out all the time. Like, I'm telling you right now, if I went to the gym when I was motivated, I would have gone like twice this year already. It's just like, and that's probably because I had an Alani Nu and I've got 200 milligrams of caffeine flowing through my veins. Other than that, like, I just go because I know it just is a habit. But most of the time I'm like, oh, freaking A, all right, let's push it. Let's get after it. And I'm constantly having to tell myself to do it, right? It's not one of those things I'm like, you know, happy-go-lucky skipping off to the gym to just like annihilate myself in a workout or do whatever I need to do for a business or put in work for, you know, my marriage. It's not always like that. But you have to just do it anyway. And so that should free everybody up that's listening to know like, yeah, most of the time you're not going to feel great about it. There will be some days that are awesome and you just want to crank and you want to put the work in, but most of the time you're not going to feel that way. But the enjoyment of knowing you did it anyway is going to feel far better and is going to far outweigh the discomfort that you felt in the moment. No doubt.
No, yeah, that's anxiety cost. So it's like the longer you don't do something, the more anxious you feel about it and the more on the forefront of your mind it stays. And then the second you do it, you send the email, you reply to the client, you hit the gym. Yep. As soon as you leave, you feel amazing. But for some reason, getting back to that next thing is just horrible. Adam, I could talk to you for hours, man. I really could. Hours, I think we have similar ideology about stuff. Where can people find you, man? Where, you know, if they want to work with you, where can they find you and how should they reach out?
Yeah, totally. So I'm mostly on Instagram. So you can find me there, Adam Pohlmann _ PT, and it's Pohlmann. I'm sure if you type in the first three letters, you'll find it. So you don't have to worry about spelling the whole thing. My German grandparents really gave me a difficult task with that last name. Anyway, yeah, you can find me there on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, just my first name, last name, Adam Pohlmann, and email adam@pohlmannfitness.com. Those are probably the easiest ways to reach out.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam, for coming on, and thank you everybody for listening. We're definitely going to have you on again for sure, man.
Absolutely.
Right. We'll see you next time, guys. Thank you.